A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's noticed that being a prospective tenant in Israel now requires actual detective skills. The latest trend is realtors posting AI-generated photos with 6-point font disclaimers, saying they're for illustrative purposes only. Add to that the classics. Construction sites that are supposedly finishing next month, wide-angle photos that double the apparent square footage, and viewings that waste your time because nothing matches the listing. He's asking for a practical audit framework. What to check before you ever set foot in a viewing, and what to say to a realtor who's motivated by a one-month commission to tell you everything's perfect.
This is genuinely one of the most important questions anyone renting in Israel could ask. The structural incentives here are brutal. A realtor in Israel earns between 8 and 12% of the annual rent as commission, typically one full month's rent, per signed lease. That's not per month of work, that's per deal closed. So every viewing they do that doesn't convert is lost income. The system is designed to push tenants toward signing fast, and the faster you sign, the less time you have to notice what's wrong.
Which makes the realtor your adversary, not your advocate. They're not a fiduciary. They're not required to verify anything in the listing. They're an intermediary with a financial interest in you not asking too many questions.
And the numbers are getting worse. The Ministry of Housing reported a 40% increase in listing-related complaints between January and May of this year compared to the same period in 2025. That's not a seasonal blip. That's a systemic breakdown in trust.
Where do we start? Someone sitting at home, scrolling through listings, trying to figure out which ones are even worth the bus ride.
Layer 1, and this is non-negotiable, reverse image search every single photo in the listing. Use Google Lens and TinEye. Both are free, both work from your phone. Here's what you're looking for. That gorgeous balcony with the sea view? I saw a case in Florentine where the balcony photo was pulled from a hotel in Eilat. The actual balcony was a 1.5 meter Juliet. You could stand on it if you exhaled first.
Wait, so someone downloaded a photo of a hotel balcony and just pasted it into their apartment listing?
That's exactly what they did, and it worked for 3 weeks before someone caught it. 3 weeks of viewings where people showed up, saw the Juliet balcony, and were told some variation of, oh, the photo must have been from a different unit in the building. Which, by the way, is the standard fallback line when you catch them. Must have been a mix-up with another listing. It's never a mix-up. It's a strategy.
Of course there are.
It's not just scenic fraud. Sometimes the furniture photos are lifted from IKEA catalogs or stock photo libraries. Sometimes the same image appears in a different listing for a different apartment in a different city. That's an instant disqualification. If one photo is fake, you can't trust anything else in the listing. I once found the exact same photo of a living room used in 3 different listings in Tel Aviv, Haifa, and Beersheba simultaneously. Same couch, same throw pillows, same potted plant. That plant got around.
A traveling ficus. What about the AI-generated stuff? The images that were never real in the first place?
This is the new frontier. Since March of this year, at least 3 major Israeli realty platforms, Yad2, the government's Nadlin portal, and homeless.co.il, updated their terms of service to explicitly allow what they call artistic renderings in listings. There's supposed to be a disclosure requirement, but the reality is those disclosures are buried in 6-point font at the bottom of the page. Most people never see them.
That's a beautiful euphemism for fake pictures of a room that doesn't exist.
The platforms will tell you it's about helping tenants visualize renovated spaces or new construction. And there's a legitimate use case. If a building is under construction and you're signing a pre-completion lease, a rendering helps you understand the floor plan. But that's not what's happening. What's happening is realtors are feeding prompts into Midjourney version 6 or DALL-E 3 to generate photorealistic interiors that make a 40 square meter studio look like a penthouse.
Can the average person actually spot those? I thought the whole problem was that they're indistinguishable from real photos.
The common misconception is that AI photos look cartoonish or too perfect. That was true 2 years ago. It's not true now. Midjourney version 6 produces images that fool most viewers on first glance. But there are tells if you know what to look for. Inconsistent window reflections. Look at what's reflected in the glass versus what should be outside. Impossible lighting angles. A room lit from two directions with no visible windows on one side. And the biggest giveaway, furniture that doesn't match Israeli standard sizes. A standard Israeli double bed is about 190 by 140 centimeters. If the bed in the photo looks 220 long in what's supposed to be a 3-meter room, the proportions are off because the AI doesn't understand local furniture dimensions.
You're looking for the uncanny valley of IKEA.
That's exactly what it is. The uncanny valley of IKEA. And once you start looking for it, you can't unsee it.
Can you walk me through an actual example? Say I'm looking at a listing right now, and the living room photo looks suspicious. What am I actually doing step by step?
All right, pull up the photo. First, look at the ceiling height relative to the furniture. Israeli apartments, especially older ones, typically have ceiling heights between 250 and 280 centimeters. If the room looks cavernous, like 350 or more, and the listing doesn't mention high ceilings, that's your first flag. Second, check the electrical outlets. Israeli outlets are a specific 3-pin design. AI generators frequently get these wrong. They'll show European 2-pin outlets or some generic blob that's supposed to be an outlet. Third, look at the view from the windows. If you can see outside, does the view match the neighborhood? I saw an AI-generated listing for an apartment in Florentin that showed a view of what looked like the Swiss Alps. Unless the geography of South Tel Aviv changed dramatically overnight, that's a problem.
It's a combination of technical tells and contextual impossibilities.
The AI doesn't know that Florentin doesn't have mountain views. It just knows that nice apartments often have nice views, so it generates one. The context collapse is the giveaway.
Okay, so layer 1 is reverse image search plus AI spotting. What's layer 2?
Layer 2 is the Arnona database. Arnona is the municipal property tax, and Israel has a free government portal through the gov.il website, where you can look up the declared square meterage of any residential property by address. This is public information. Enter the address, and the system will tell you what the municipality has on file for that unit size.
By law, the listing has to match.
Within 10%. If the listing says 70 square meters and the Arnona database says 52, that's not a rounding error, that's misrepresentation. I know of a case in Haifa where a tenant brought a laser measurer to the viewing, confirmed the apartment was 52 square meters instead of the listed 70, filed a complaint with the Consumer Protection Authority, and the listing was removed within 48 hours.
A laser measurer? That's a 30-shekel device from KSP.
Fits in your pocket. And here's the psychological advantage. Realtors expect tenants to bring a tape measure. It's a known thing. Nobody expects a laser. When you pull out a laser distance measurer and start checking room dimensions against the listing, you've just signaled that you are not the mark they were hoping for.
Like bringing a Geiger counter to a mushroom picking expedition.
I don't know what that means, but yes, probably. Layer 3, construction permits. Every municipality in Israel has an online planning portal. Tel Aviv has Lichvad Haitena, Jerusalem has its own system, and so on. These portals let you look up active construction permits for any address. Here's why this matters. A listing says construction next door is finishing next month. You look up the permit, and it was issued in February of this year with a 24-month validity period. That means the project is legally allowed to continue through February 2028. Finishing next month is a lie.
The realtor knows it's a lie.
The realtor doesn't care if it's a lie. That's the key thing to internalize. Realtors are not required to verify anything they put in a listing. They act as intermediaries, not fiduciaries. The penalties for misrepresentation are minimal. The system does not punish them for telling you the construction will be done in a month. It only punishes them if you can prove they knowingly deceived you, and proving knowledge is nearly impossible. So they operate in a zone of plausible deniability. They repeat what the owner told them, and nobody checks.
Which means the burden is entirely on the tenant. You're your own consumer protection agency.
That brings us to layer 4, Google Maps Street View historical data. Most people don't know this, but Street View has a time slider. When you're looking at a location, you can drag the little yellow pegman onto the map and then click the clock icon to see previous captures. You might see images from 2018, 2021, 2023. What you're looking for is the history of the building. Was there a crane there 2 years ago? A facade that suddenly changed color between captures because it was renovated? If the listing says the building was renovated last year, but Street View shows scaffolding in 2023, the timeline doesn't add up.
You're essentially doing forensic architectural history from your couch.
Before you've even put on shoes. And here's the thing. None of these tools cost money. Reverse image search, the Arnona database, municipal planning portals, Street View history, all free, all accessible from a phone. The only investment is time. And it's a lot less time than showing up to a viewing for an apartment that doesn't exist.
We've got four previewing layers. Reverse image search, Arnona square meterage check, construction permit lookup, and Street View archaeology. What's the threshold? How many of these need to come back suspicious before you walk away?
I'd propose a three-strike rule. If a listing fails any two of the first four checks, any two, skip the viewing entirely. The probability that you're dealing with a deceptive listing after two failures is high enough that it's not worth the bus fare. One failure might be an honest mistake. Two is a pattern.
That's a good heuristic. But let's say a listing passes the pre-audit. You've done your homework, you've scheduled the viewing, you're standing in the apartment.
Now you flip the script. The realtor has been preparing for this moment. They've staged the apartment, they've rehearsed their talking points, they know exactly which questions you're going to ask, and they have smooth answers for all of them. Your job is to ask questions they haven't prepared for.
Give me an example.
Instead of asking, is construction finishing soon? Which invites a yes, absolutely, next month, you ask, what's the permit number for the construction next door? A realtor who's been honest will either know it or offer to find it. A realtor who's been lying will hesitate, deflect, or get defensive. Similarly, don't ask, how big is the apartment? Ask, when was the last Arnona assessment for this unit, and what square meterage did it declare? That's a question that has a verifiable answer. If the number they give you doesn't match what you already looked up, you've caught them.
You're forcing them into a corner, where the only way out is to admit they don't know something verifiable.
And you're doing it politely. You're not accusing them of anything. You're just a well-informed tenant asking specific questions. The beauty of this approach is that honest realtors won't be bothered by it. They'll appreciate that you've done your homework. It's only the deceptive ones who will squirm.
What if the realtor doesn't know the permit number or the Arnona assessment? Couldn't an honest realtor just not have that information on hand?
That's a fair question, and it's where the follow-up matters. If they say, I don't have the permit number right now, but I can get it for you by tomorrow, that's a reasonable response. Write down that they said that and follow up. If they say, why do you need that, or don't worry about it, that's when you worry about it. The deflection is the tell, not the lack of immediate information. An honest professional is comfortable saying, I'll find out. A dishonest one needs you to stop asking.
It's less about them having the answer in the moment, and more about their willingness to provide it at all.
You're testing for good faith, not for encyclopedic knowledge.
What about the legal side? Say you've signed a lease and then discovered the apartment is 20% smaller than advertised. What actually protects you?
Under the Israeli rent law, hak ha-sekuret. Misrepresentation of property size by more than 10%, or hiding material defects like mold, structural issues, or ongoing construction can void the lease or entitle you to damages. The key word is can. This is civil law, not criminal. You have to pursue it yourself, and that means documenting everything in writing. Every promise, every claim, every representation, get it in writing. If the realtor won't put it in writing, assume it's not true.
Which is a stark contrast to places like the UK, where the Property Misdescriptions Act from 1991 makes it a criminal offense to misrepresent property details. Israel has no equivalent criminal statute. It's all civil remedies.
That shifts the entire burden to the tenant. You have to be your own investigator, your own lawyer, your own enforcement agency. The system is not designed to protect you, it's designed to facilitate transactions. And the faster the transactions happen, the more commissions get paid.
There's another angle here I want to explore. The small print disclaimers. You mentioned them earlier. Photos are for illustrative purposes only, buried in 6-point font. Is that actually legal?
Under the Israeli Consumer Protection Law, specifically the 2024 amendment, any disclaimer that materially affects a consumer's decision must be conspicuous. The courts have interpreted conspicuous to mean a font size that a reasonable person would notice and read. 6-point font is not that. 8 points is generally considered the legal minimum for conspicuous disclosure. If you find a listing with a disclaimer in 6-point font, you can file a complaint with the Consumer Protection Authority, and that complaint has teeth.
The disclaimer itself, when it's hidden, becomes evidence of deceptive practice rather than protection against liability.
The realtor thinks they're covering themselves by adding the fine print, but if the fine print is too fine, it's not a shield, it's a confession. They're admitting they're showing you images that don't represent the property while deliberately making that admission hard to find.
That's almost elegant, in a horrible way.
It's the legal equivalent of writing, "I'm lying in invisible ink."
Let's talk about the market dynamics for a second. What happens when everyone starts doing these audits? What's the knock-on effect of widespread distrust in listings?
We're already seeing it. There's a trust collapse happening in the Israeli rental market. Tenants are increasingly ignoring online listings entirely and relying on WhatsApp groups, personal referrals, word of mouth. On one hand, that's a rational response to a broken system. On the other hand, it shrinks the effective market. If you're not in the right WhatsApp groups, you don't see the good apartments. That concentrates the market among insiders and drives up prices for everyone else.
The people who lose most are newcomers, immigrants, people without local networks.
The exact people who can least afford to lose. Students, olim, young families moving to a new city. They're the ones most dependent on public listings, and they're the ones most vulnerable to deception. It's a regressive tax on not knowing someone.
I want to sit with that for a second, because it's darker than it sounds. You arrive in a new country. You don't speak the language fluently. You don't have a cousin who knows a guy. And the public infrastructure that's supposed to help you find housing is actively lying to you. What does that do to someone's first 6 months in Israel?
It's devastating. I've spoken to Olam, who spent their first 3 months in the country bouncing between sublets and short-term rentals because every long-term listing they pursued turned out to be fraudulent in some way. That's 3 months of instability when you're also trying to navigate a new bureaucracy, a new language, a new job. The rental market isn't just a market, it's the gateway to every other form of integration. If you can't find stable housing, everything else cascades.
The realtor who showed them the fake listing has already moved on to the next client.
Already cashed the commission check from someone else. There's no feedback loop. The people harmed are the least equipped to file complaints, and the people profiting face no consequences.
What about the realtor's incentive structure? Is there a way to align their interests with yours?
There's an approach that's gaining traction called a tenant representation agreement. Instead of the realtor representing the landlord, which is the default, you sign an agreement where the realtor represents you, the tenant. Their commission is still paid from the lease, but it's tied to your satisfaction and your criteria, not the landlord's. This aligns incentives. The realtor now has a reason to find you a good apartment rather than just any apartment.
How many realtors will agree to that?
Not many, and that's the point. The ones who refuse are telling you something about how they operate. The ones who agree are the ones you want to work with. It's a filtering mechanism.
Even asking the question is a diagnostic.
Ask the realtor if they're willing to sign a tenant representation agreement. Watch their reaction. If they're confused or hostile, walk away. If they're open to it, you found one of the good ones. I know someone who asked this question to 5 different realtors during her search last year. 4 of them reacted like she'd asked them to sign a confession. The 5th one said, "I've actually been wanting to offer that. Let me send you a draft." She found her apartment through him, and it was exactly as advertised.
That's a heartwarming story in an otherwise deeply cynical episode.
It's important to remember that good realtors do exist. They're just outnumbered, and the system doesn't reward them for being good. It rewards them for being fast.
Let's circle back to something practical. You mentioned the laser measurer for the viewing itself. What else should someone bring?
Bring a notebook and actually use it. Write down everything the realtor says. Square meterage, construction timelines, renovation history, appliance conditions. The act of writing things down does 2 things. First, it creates a record. Second, it makes the realtor more careful about what they say. People are less likely to lie when they see their words being recorded.
Even if it's just a notebook, not a recording device.
Especially if it's a notebook. A phone recording might make them clam up. A notebook signals that you're organized and paying attention, but it doesn't feel adversarial. It feels professional.
What about the things you can't check from a database? Mold? plumbing, noise.
For mold, look under the kitchen sink and behind the washing machine connections. Those are the places where leaks start and where mold grows first. Here's a specific technique. Bring a small flashlight, not just your phone light, shine it at an angle along the wall behind the sink. Mold that's been painted over, and yes, they do that, will show a slight texture difference under angled light. It looks smooth head-on, but bumpy from the side. For plumbing, turn on every tap and flush every toilet. Don't be embarrassed, you're about to sign a contract for tens of thousands of shekels. Run the shower for 30 seconds and check if the water pressure drops. Low pressure might mean old pipes, or a shared line with another unit. For noise, here's a trick. Schedule the viewing for the evening around 7 or 8 when neighbors are home. A quiet apartment at 11 in the morning tells you nothing about what it sounds like at 9 at night. While you're there, ask to open a window and just listen for 60 seconds. Traffic, construction, the neighbor's TV, the bar downstairs that hasn't opened yet because it's still afternoon. These are things you'll live with every day. Also, check the windows themselves. If they're single-pane aluminum frames from the 1980s, they're doing almost nothing for sound insulation no matter how quiet the street seems right now.
If the realtor won't schedule evening viewings,
then you know there's something they don't want you to hear. I've heard of cases where realtors would only schedule viewings during school hours because the apartment was above a kindergarten. At 10 in the morning, silent. At 4 in the afternoon, 100 children screaming in the courtyard. The realtor knows this. That's why they won't show it at 4.
What's the single most common mistake you see tenants make?
The rental market in Israel, especially in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, creates this artificial scarcity pressure. Apartments go fast. If you don't sign today, someone else will, and so on. Realtors exploit this. They create urgency because urgency short-circuits your critical thinking. The single best thing you can do is slow down. A bad apartment signed today is worse than a good apartment signed next week. The market moves fast, but it doesn't move so fast that you can't take 24 hours to verify what you've been told.
That's rich coming from a donkey.
I contain multitudes.
Let's talk about what happens after the viewing, assuming you're interested. You've done your pre-audit, you've asked your verifiable questions, you've measured the rooms. Now you're considering signing. What's the final checklist before you put pen to paper?
First, get the contract in Hebrew and in English if you need it, but understand that the Hebrew version is the legally binding one. If there's a discrepancy between the two, the Hebrew text controls. So if you're not fluent in Hebrew, bring someone who is, or pay a translator. It's worth a few hundred shekels. Second, read the contract. Actually read it. If there's something you don't understand, ask. If the realtor pressures you to sign without reading, that's a red flag the size of a billboard. Third, make sure every verbal promise is in the contract. The realtor said the landlord will replace the air conditioner? Put it in the contract with a specific deadline. Said construction will finish by August? Put it in the contract with a penalty clause. If construction continues past August, rent is reduced by X percent until it stops.
If the realtor says, don't worry, it'll be fine. You don't need to put that in writing.
Then it won't be fine, and it won't happen, and you'll have no recourse. Verbal promises in the Israeli rental market are worth approximately the paper they're printed on.
Which is none.
Which is none. The contract is the only thing that matters. Everything else is theater. I'll give you a concrete example. A tenant I know was promised that the landlord would install bars on the windows before move-in. The realtor said, of course, it's already arranged, not in the contract. Move-in day arrives, no bars. The tenant calls the realtor, who says, I'll talk to the landlord. 2 months later, still no bars. The tenant had no leverage because the promise didn't exist on paper. She ended up paying for the bars herself, 3,000 shekels, because she didn't want to live on the ground floor without them.
3,000 shekels for a promise that cost the realtor nothing to make.
The realtor faced zero consequences. That's the asymmetry we keep coming back to.
I want to zoom out for a second. We've been talking about individual tactics, what to check, what to ask, what to bring. But there's a systemic dimension here that's worth addressing. If every tenant has to become an amateur private investigator just to rent an apartment, the market is broken at a structural level.
And there is some movement on the legislative side. The Knesset is currently considering the Real Estate Transparency Bill, proposed in March of this year. If passed, it would require all listing photos to include metadata tags indicating whether they're AI-generated or actual photographs. It would also mandate minimum font sizes for disclaimers and create penalties for misrepresentation that are actually enforceable.
What are its chances?
The real estate lobby is powerful, and the platforms have argued that the bill would create compliance costs that would be passed on to consumers. But the 40% increase in complaints has gotten the attention of several MKs across the political spectrum. There's a consumer protection caucus that's been pushing it.
Listeners who care about this should write to their MKs.
And beyond that, there's a collective action angle. One of the most effective things tenants can do is contribute to a shared database of deceptive listings. A Google Sheet, a shared document, something crowdsourced where people log addresses, listing URLs, and what was deceptive. Individual complaints to the Consumer Protection Authority are useful, but aggregated data is harder to ignore. If a single realtor has 15 entries in the database, that's a pattern.
The wisdom of the crowd applied to real estate fraud.
It's the only scalable defense. The platforms aren't going to police themselves. The government moves slowly. The market incentives push toward deception. The only counterweight is organized tenants sharing information.
There's something almost nostalgic about this. We're using 21st century AI to generate fake apartment photos, and the solution is a Google Sheet, the oldest trick in the book.
Sometimes the best tool for a high-tech problem is a low-tech solution. A community spreadsheet doesn't require an API, doesn't have a terms of service that can be changed, doesn't depend on any platform's goodwill. It's just people telling each other what they saw.
Like a neighborhood watch, but for square footage.
The neighborhood watch for square footage. That's the episode title right there.
Let's bring this home with something actionable. If someone's listening right now, about to start their apartment search, what's the 60-second version of everything we've covered?
1. Reverse image search every photo and every listing using Google Lens and TinEye. 2. Check the Arnona database on the gov.il portal for the property's declared square meterage. It must match the listing within 10%. 3. Look up construction permits on the municipality's planning portal to verify timelines. 4. Use Google Maps Street View historical data to check the building's history. 5. Bring a laser measurer to every viewing and use it. 6. Ask for permit numbers and Arnona assessments instead of asking vague questions about timelines and sizes.
The three-strike rule.
If a listing fails any two of the first four checks, skip the viewing. Your time is worth more than their lies.
What about the conversation with the realtor, the human element?
Be polite, be prepared, and be specific. Don't ask whether something is true. Ask for the verifiable evidence that it's true. A realtor who can provide it is worth working with. A realtor who can't is telling you everything you need to know.
The long-term trajectory here. Where does this go? AI generation is only getting better. By late 2027, the industry forecasts say AI images will be essentially indistinguishable from photography. What happens to the rental market then?
We're heading toward a world where you can't trust any digital listing at face value. The likely outcome is some form of verified photography. A certification service like a blue check for apartment listings where an independent third party confirms that the photos represent the actual property. Some platforms in the US are already experimenting with this. It'll come here eventually, probably after things get bad enough that the market demands it.
We'll just go back to renting apartments based on hand-drawn floor plans and personal introductions.
Honestly, that might not be the worst outcome. The technology got ahead of the trust infrastructure. Sometimes the only fix is to pull back and rebuild the social layer.
Rebuilding the social layer. That's a good place to leave it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the high medieval period, travelers crossing the Aral Sea Basin reported a pale gray lichen that locals called stone ghost. Its scientific name, Xanthopermelia, derives from Greek roots meaning yellow shield, but the medieval Arabic name was said to refer to the lichen's tendency to appear on gravestones within a year of burial, leading to the belief that it was a manifestation of the soul's residue.
Right. The soul's residue on a gravestone in lichen form. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for the daily fact and for somehow finding the most unsettling lichen trivia in existence.
If you've got a rental horror story or a detective tactic we didn't cover, we want to hear it. Send your prompts and your war stories to myweirdprompts.com.
If this episode saved you from signing a lease on a fictional balcony, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps more than you know.
We'll be back next week. Until then, measure twice, sign once.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.